It's time for another edition of Dome and Domer, the only podcast for Notre Dame fans by Notre Dame fans. If you're looking for cogent analysis and unbiased opinions backed by careful reporting, you've come to the wrong place. For the next 20 minutes or so, you'll get a fan's perspective on the Fighting Irish without all the normal spin from the so-called professional analysts. It's Dome and Domer. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me tonight, Mike Coffey from IndyNation.com and Ed Jordanic, as always, the other side of Dome and Domer. Coffey, I want to start with you because I think this is not going to shock you just based on your prediction prior to the Clemson game, but I'm going to predict that we actually beat the spread. I'm not going to say that we're going to win the football game, but I do think we actually are going to beat the spread. I think we're going to have a shot at winning the football game, but I just don't see it happening when it's all said and done. Tell me why I'm crazy and I'm out of my mind and why this podcast as a Notre Dame fan podcast is what it is and allows Notre Dame guys to think that we have a shot.
Well,
be honest now. Come clean.
I think the list of reasons you're nuts is as long as my arm. I said on our site the other day, I would consider this game a success if at no point during the course of the game is Notre Dame behind by more than the spread, which I think is what, like 19-20 at this point? Yeah. I haven't looked recently. So if they are within 20 points from kickoff to final gun, that's probably a success. I'm not happy about the fact that that should be considered a success, but I think right now that's what we have to look at. I think when you're going up against an offense with three of the five final Heisman finalists, quarterback, running back, and wide receiver, I mean that's a tremendous array of talent, and I realize that our defense are gamers, no doubt about it, but they can at best hope to slow them down, which means the offense is pretty much gonna have to score every time it has the ball, and I really don't see that happening. Yeah. I would love it if we saw Clemson game one Ian Book, but my fear is we're gonna see Clemson game two Ian Book, and we're gonna run into all sorts of problems.
Yeah. Ed, just to kind of further this point, and I'm just going to make this and see what you think. I really feel like, because, you know, college football, the reason we love it so much is because there is so many ups and downs in a game that takes control of the emotions that play out. And I really feel like had Avery Davis caught that fourth down play, it's a totally different game than what played out. And I do think that it is going to make a big statement in the first quarter if we do somehow hold the game and at the end of the first quarter we're not behind or we're down by three. If we're down by two scores at the end of the first quarter, we all know what's going to happen the rest of the game. But, you know, college football is that way. And I think this defensive team is better than the 2020 or the 2012 team. I really do. All across the board. I don't think we have, you know, the equivalent of Manti Te'o, but we do have a guy that's going to be has won the Buckus Award, and we got some serious talent on defense. I don't know. I mean, I think this is one of those things where it's kind of overblown, but I don't know. I could be wrong. Tell me where I'm off.
Ooh, yeah, I mean, I just don't think we played very well in Clemson 2. Now, a lot of that was Clemson and Trevor Lawrence, but I mean, I don't think Clemson stopped trying to score touchdowns in the second half. And, you know, whether it was Lee adjustments or we started to play better, I just didn't think we blocked or tackled very well in the Clemson, you know, in the ACC championship game. And I also, you know, don't think the first quarter is a problem. It's the second quarter. So, yeah. You know, you yep. talk about, you know, kind of being within a couple of touchdowns at the end of the first quarter. Good God, I hope we are. But I think what's going to matter is sort of if we're able to sort of sustain that sort of, you know, obviously we have to start well, but then we got to kind of keep it, you know, keep it close by halftime. If we keep it close by halftime, you know, by that I mean within a score or 10, something like that, if that's possible, you know, then I think possibly it's game on. I just don't think we played very well against Clemson too. And I, you know, my measure of success is, you know, of course, obviously I think it's tough to beat a team like Alabama just because, you know, it's hard to limit explosive plays against a team like that. You know, I kind of draw the analogy to, you know, the 92 Sugar Bowl. I think, you know, that was the famous Cheerios Bowl where nobody thought Notre Dame belonged against Spurrier and Shane Matthews and Fun and Gun. And, you know, Holtz kind of played this 3-8 defense where, you know, they just kind of kept everything in front of them, forced a few Florida mistakes, but also, you know, just kind of, you know, gave up a lot of yards between the 20s, but really stiffened in the red zone. Is that something like that possible to do? I mean, that's kind of Clark Lee's MO anyways. I mean, you know, through his tenure at Notre Dame as defensive coordinator, you know, we have given up a fair amount of, but we've been good on third down. We've been good in the red zone defense. You know, is that possible against this Alabama team? Can we force them to try a couple field goals or force them into some difficult situations in the red zone? You know, I don't know. I'd like to think so. I think part of the problem is that, you know, I thought Sean Crawford had a really rough game against Clemson from the get-go. I mean, he looked slow. He didn't look instinctive.
Well, he got beat on that deep play in a really bad way.
Yeah, but
I mean, and that was a turning point in the game for sure.
Yeah, that was the most glaring. But also, if you kind of watch right from the beginning, he was not his run support was poor. He got out of position, caught out of position on a couple of Etienne's runs, and then you know, and Lawrence basically just had his number all day and kind of picked on him. And it did not turn out well. And we just don't have sort of that's, you know, as everybody knows, that's sort of Notre Dame's biggest Achilles heel when it comes to, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Kyle Hamilton and a bunch of guys that are trying hard, not sort of the four-star kind of, or, you lockdown, know, kind of the, yeah, the bet, right. And, you know, it sounds like we're going to get there, you know, with recruiting, but it is kind of the place that we're sort of, you know, in total. But I do agree with Mike Coffey. I mean, the offense has to, you know, the offensive line had its worst game. And that, I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see if we could sort of, you know, I mean, Alabama's a plug-and-play school because of their recruiting prowess. You know, are they going to have the drop-off that we obviously had without Jared Patterson, without their All-American center? You know, will that be a little bit of something that we could take a little bit of advantage of? Does that make it maybe a little bit easier to keep, you know, the Harris a little bit more in check because they're not quite as coordinated up the middle in there. I don't know. You know, these are all ifs. Alabama's going to have to make some mistakes. We're going to have to play, you know, great. All those kind of things have to go right.
But yeah, it's going to have to all click. Yeah. I agree. We'll know at the end. I think we're going to know at the end of the first quarter. But, you know, Coffee, I think the thing that gives me a little bit of hope is, you know, the thing prior to the game, I was really concerned about Lawrence running. And I just knew that there's just no way you can cover that. It's a big ask on the defense to play the kind of defense that we do and expect to be able to hold a quarterback in check who can tuck it and run like Lawrence can. I don't think Jones presents that same problem. However, he's as good, if not better, you know, just based on his QB rating. And he's got some weapons, like you say, and that's a problem. But I just think that the non-threat of the running aspect is something that might might give us a better chance, might give us maybe that one or two chances of, you know, picking off a pass here or there that, that kind of all of a sudden turns the game around. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
It's certainly possible. I think one aspect of the playoffs and maybe even the bowl season entirely this year, especially the high profile ones where no one's opted out and everyone's playing, is every conference only played within themselves. We had an argument on the site today about how Notre Dame's defense is rated higher than any defense Alabama's played so far this year. And I think one thing that makes that statistical analysis difficult is Notre Dame played all ACC teams. I think Alabama played all SEC teams. Now, I won't speak to whether or not that puts a skew in there or not, but if you're only playing within your conference and there's no common opponents and you can't really spread the data out to see, well, how did they do in this situation? How did they do in that situation? It makes the comparisons more difficult. I'm not going to pretend that SEC defenses aren't pretty highly ranked, and Alabama went through everybody like a hot knife through butter. So I don't know how much credence I'm going to give to that stat. Like you, I'll be interested to see how the first two possessions go. Because the first two possessions in the ACC title game went very well for Notre Dame. I mean, you got the interception, and I agree that if that pass to Davis had been caught, we're talking about an entirely different game, because
it could have been a seven. I mean, that could have been a touchdown.
It's very field goal. It's possible. It is possible.
That's right. So everything changes.
So I'm going to be interested to see how this team comes out. If they come out with fire in their eyes and say, you know what, we've got no reason to leave anything on the field. We may as well just go. Nobody thinks we can win. We might as well go right at it and just take the chances, try to make the plays. In particular, that's what Ian Book needs to do. He did that, as I said, in the first Clemson game. He was much looser. He was throwing his receivers open. He was willing to take chances and risk interceptions to try to get the ball moving. After the first two possessions, he did not do that against Clemson in the second game. I don't know whether it's because Clemson was getting successful penetration up the middle with Josh Lugg being there in place of Patterson, but for whatever reason, he was a lot less willing to take a chance on his receivers going up to get the ball than he was before. Now, Alabama's secondary, I mean, they've got sustain, but the other guys aren't necessarily world beaters, and we may have some height advantages. So
they've given up 40 plus points, what, three times this season?
Yeah. So I think everybody on both sides of the ball has to be willing just to play balls out, if you excuse the expression. They can't be timid. They can't be try to be calculating. They just got to fly and make the best of it. Because if they try to get crafty, or if Ian Book says, "Well, I'm going to hold on to the ball, see if an even better receiver opens up," no, too late. You're done. So
yeah,
they have to come out and leave it all on the field. Because if we start seeing slumped shoulders and bad body language, then we're boned.
No, that is. But I mean, I think that's the whole thing of college football. And that's why I think that you know, Ed, I think one interesting aspect of the games on Friday is that I know this is going to sound a little bit crazy, but I honestly believe that Ohio State has more to lose than us. If Ohio State gets beat and gets beat by multiple scores, there are a lot of people that are going to be saying, well, wait a minute, what were these guys doing even in this? With only playing six games. If Notre Dame keeps it close and it's a close loss, boy, is that going to put huge pressure on Ohio State if all of a sudden they turn around and get blown out. Now, I know that everybody's trying to say that, hey, this is typical Notre Dame. They don't belong. They're going to get completely blown out by Bama. It's going to be 52-17. And this game is, you know, should have never happened. That's what everybody's saying right now today. And I mean, obviously with Vegas at 20 points, I mean, come on. So it, I don't see it that way at all. I don't think it's going to happen. Number one, I really don't. I think this is a much better team than people are giving us credit for. And I do think we are going to cover the spread. I don't know that we're going to win the football game, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if it's 38-25 Bama.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think, you know, college football is really unpredictable. And we all have a recency bias, right? I mean, you know, whatever, 10 million people watch Notre Dame, you know, lose to Clemson. And basically they were a hot knife through butter through our defense in the second quarter. And that was it, right? So that's people's lasting impression of this team. And I think if you've watched the body of work, and yeah, you know, no common opponents and, you know, and all that, I totally agree that. But I mean, you can make an argument that, you know, sort of nobody said, you know, that's the kind of thing about, because Notre Dame has not sort of been competitive, you know, kind of in terms of final score with, you know, Clemson and, you know, Alabama in 2012 and all this kind of stuff. Like, they don't get a lot of credit for basically, you know, making a, you know, high powered North Carolina offense look impotent. And that's what they did. I mean, they literally shut
they
down
totally
a
did.
Team
yeah,
that
totally
racked up points, yards through the air, on the ground against everybody this year. Right. And I think, you know, I think it's possible that North Carolina, you know, I'd love to see North Carolina win their bowl game handily. I think that would make Notre Dame look pretty good. But also, you know, so you gotta at least, I think the proportionality of sort of how that game is viewed is you know, it's really minimized, and it's maybe, you know, again, I'm not trying to equate the two, but it's really sort of minimized as opposed to, like you said, what the storyline is kind of, you know, coming out of the game against Clemson. And I know I'm sort of like a broken record, but Notre Dame just didn't play well against Clemson the second time. And maybe that was, they were out schemed. Maybe that was out coached, you know, maybe, you know, whatever. But the bottom line is Alabama has better players. Alabama has better coaches. They are in my mind, and always have been, even with Dabo's, you know, terrific, sort of, I think the challenges that Saban has, you know, are greater. You know, Dabo's had all this coaching continuity, you know, what Saban has done. I mean, I think he's in the pantheon of, like, great coaches in any sport of all time. I mean, I think it's remarkable what he's able to do. So, you know, for a lot of different reasons, you know, they should be favored by 20. But it is college football. It is, you know, 19, 20, 21-year-olds. It is, you know, a bunch of guys that can't help but be, you know, talking to agents right now. if they're Alabama's guys, can't help but be maybe peeking ahead a little bit. You know, so, and it's a very disciplined culture. I mean, I'm sure that he's pounding into their skulls that they could lose this game. But again, they're not professionals yet. And I agree with Mike Coffey. I mean, Notre Dame has to come out sort of, and this has not been Brian Kelly's forte. You know, our frame of reference for these kind of things, has always been, you know, Holtz, because he had this knack of getting a team, ready for these moments, kind of ready for these against all odds Notre Dame moments. That was just his thing. Whether it was, you know, nobody believes in you, or whether it was building a team up or tearing them down or whatever, he just knew which buttons to push.
Yeah.
And,
well, I think, you know, in the Florida game that you referenced in 1992, I mean, that was definitely one of them. But even the year following, everybody thought Texas A&M was going to kick the crap out of us. I think everybody thought they were going to beat the shit out of us, and all of a sudden we dominate them and win the football game.
Yeah,
so you're right.
Those were pretty talented Notre Dame teams. I mean, we also
have to
remember,
yeah,
you know, they had a lot of, you know, they had a lot of, you know, even in that, I was looking at the roster, you know, in that, that 91 team that played in the 92 Sugar Bowl against Florida, you know, they had Burris and Willie Clark and,
yeah.
And, you know, who was the other guy in the defensive backfield that was, I can't remember, but they were very talented, and they were a year or two away. Right. You know,
yeah.
I think Bryant Young was a sophomore. But they also, you know, nobody realized it at the time, But, you know, Spurrier had no answer for our offensive line, which was mammoth compared to, you know, Florida had a very small and fast defensive line, and we just mauled them.
We were down 13-0 and still ran the football against them. We didn't, like, go to the air. We just continued to pound them on the ground, and it ended up, you know, which was, I thought was amazing. I watched that game start to finish, like, about 3 weeks ago. It's amazing to watch it, but anyways. So Coffee, let me start with you. I mean, let's go ahead and just finalize it with the predictions. I mean, you got to give me your honest opinion. What do you think is going to happen? Be honest now.
At some point in the fourth quarter, Alabama is going to have 52 points and Notre Dame will have less than 14. Whether it finishes up that way with garbage time TDs, I don't know, but that's what I think is going to happen.
All right. So it's a blowout. Yeah. All right, I'm going to hold my breath for a second here. Ed, I'll let you go. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to, you know, I really did not expect Notre Dame to play as poorly as they did against Clemson. I mean, I knew that Lawrence would make a difference, but I didn't think that they'd keep Etienne, you know, bottled up completely again, but I just didn't think that they'd go a whole first half with just not making any plays whatsoever. And they just didn't, you know, they moved the ball and whatever, but when it came time to make a play, you know, in the red zone or like the Avery Davis play that you're talking about or whatever, they just kind of came up empty. But I think they're a good football team. You know, I think, I hate doing this 'cause like it's, but I think that they'll acquit themselves well, and that they'll be in the game. I think at the end of the day, you know, whether it's a just kind of a missed tackle on the outside, or you know something happens. I mean, I think it's going to be really hard to keep Alabama from you know having a 50-yard plus play. And that'll be sort of the backbreaker. I do agree with Mike Coffey that how Notre Dame reacts to a play like that and when it happens during the course of the game really matters, right? They can't hang their head. They've got to stick with what they're doing. And I think they might be able to actually run the ball a little bit against Alabama. So I'm going to say that they lose, that Notre Dame loses, 39-28.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of more in line with what I'm thinking. I think it's going to be 38. Yeah, I'll even go so far as to say 27. It could be, though, that, you know, maybe Coffee's right. There's a garbage touchdown there at the end that gets us to 27. But, you know, I do think that we are going to know exactly what's going to happen at the end of the first quarter. And, you know, typically Sully likes to turn off his TV at the end of the first quarter, depending upon what happens, like he did against the last Clemson game. As soon as Avery dropped that pass, he turned his TV off and went outside.
This cardiologist has already made enough money
exactly,
off him.
Yeah. So, I don't know why, but I just got this gut instinct that at the end of the first quarter, we're going to know exactly where this game's going to end up.
I mean, I do think big picture, it is so good for this program to be put in these situations over and over and over again if possible. I can't understand the people who say, oh, geez, you know, I wish we were in the Orange Bowl and, you know, we're going to beat Texas A&M
Florida no
or
way.
Oklahoma.
No
it
way.
Makes no sense to me that mentality.
It's crazy.
So, yeah, it just doesn't. I don't get that and I never will. I mean, you've got a situation here where, you know, it's clear who is at the top of the heap in college football in this era. And, you know, think about this. I mean, this is crazy. I know the likelihood of this happening is slim, but Notre Dame has a chance to beat Clemson, Alabama, and Ohio State in the same year. They do.
They do.
That is, and if Notre Dame somehow pulls off some crazy upset, I'll be rooting my ass off for Ohio State because we owe them. They you know,
I'd love to take them down.
They're the biggest tools in college football. Yeah. They're just awful fans and awful people, and God, I'd love to play Ohio State. So you know, I mean, but that's the position that we've kind of put ourselves in this crazy year.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's up to Brian Kelly and his staff to get these guys to embrace that challenge and play their best game of the year. We'll see if they can do it.
Right. It's going to be interesting. It's going to say a lot. I do think this is going to be, look, I mean, I think Coffey made it pretty clear that the level of talent is a huge notch above when you talk about just what they have on the offensive side of the ball. But, hey, just so you know, I got 2 tickets reserved for the game in Miami just in case. Nice. It is a possibility. So, I mean, they are on the football field, so that means it's a possibility. But I guess, you know, one of us might have bought a lottery ticket tonight, and that's also a possibility.
You know, Ed, I got to say, my wife is from the state of Ohio, and she completely agrees with you. So,
yeah. You know, that's so funny. Like,
mouth-breathing troglodytes.
Yeah, no, it's just, you know, I mean, the thing is that they're classless, and they just always have been. And, you know, I actually have a fair amount of respect for Ryan Day. He seems to be, you know, a pretty good guy and a pretty good coach. And obviously, you know, I like Tony Alford. He did a terrific job at Notre Dame, and I think he's a really class guy. But I do find it, interesting that, you know, there's a clear demarcation line in college football, you know. Obviously Alabama, Clemson, and then, you know, Ohio State gets thrown in there. Maybe not, you know, but they have performed better than Georgia, than Oklahoma, than us or whatever. So you got to kind of it is very interesting. And I just think that, you know, Notre Dame is creating these opportunities for themselves, which I think at this stage, you know, it's all we can ask. And, you know, sometimes if you just keep knocking on the door, eventually, you know, you play to the best of your abilities, and the other team maybe has a little bit of a hiccup, and suddenly, you know, you change the entire the world view on sort of your program. And it could be, you know, if they do get blown out, nobody's going to talk about it for more than a day or two, because except us, because it's expected. But right. if Jonathan Dorr kicks a 46-yard field goal as time expires for some crazy ass win, then, you know, they're going to be talking about it for years. Going to set this program on a whole possibly a potential different course, because, you know, we know that what we're dealing with Clemson, and if we play Ohio State, you know, I think that's a 50-50 ball right there. I really do. I don't think Ohio State is all that great this year.
I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so. The good news is I definitely think we're closing the gap. I mean, I think no matter what, everybody's going to evaluate the game Friday as to how much have we closed the gap. And a lot of people at this point think we haven't at all. We're the same, and the gap hasn't closed at all.
Right.
And that's just going to be a complete blowout. I don't think that at all. I really don't. I think this is a much better team than the 2012 team. I really do. I think there's a lot to be said on the offensive side of the ball with the offensive line and with a guy like Ian Book, who's a seasoned guy, who I think can respond. I think Coffey, you're right. I don't think he had his best game. I think you're totally right about that. You know, I think we're going to see more of the same, where he's going to try and get outside the pocket and give himself a chance to see better. It's just who he is. I mean, he's not a 6'5 guy like Trevor Lawrence. But you know what? I think Alabama is not as good defensively in certain positions that Clemson is, and maybe we get lucky with that. I don't know. I mean, you just never know. But I just don't see, in my mind, I don't see 52-17, and maybe it's more hope than not. But, hey, the interesting thing is we'll get to discuss it afterwards.
Yeah, and let's make sure we do, because we can.
We're definitely going to have a show after this, because I think it's a great season. I you know, look, we made it to the playoffs again. Brian Kelly's 10 years into his tenure at Notre Dame, he's finished 3 times undefeated. I mean, holy crap. If you'd have told me that before he signed on, I would have said, give me that all day long. He's been to two college football playoffs. And yeah, it hasn't turned out like we have, but who knows what happens Friday. I mean, shit. You know what? We're heading in the right direction. It's a lot better than the Tyrone Willingham days, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I will say when you really sit back and analyze it, the thing that's missing, and you know, and Book has had a great year, and I think we got to give him all the credit in the world. But I think what the piece that's really been missing, if you look across sort of college football the last 3 or 4 years, the teams, you know, it's been really sort of game changing, dynamic quarterback play. And I think the real interesting kind of the thing that Brian Kelly hasn't quite done yet that he gets, you know, critiqued for sometimes rightly, sometimes wrongly, is if, you know, if this guy, you know, Buchner coming from California, and I don't want to put too much, you know, I don't know him from anything, and he may end up being a, you know, and, but you know, it's like, it's getting one of these guys and turning them into somebody that has the impact of, you know, a Jalen Hurts or a Trevor Lawrence or a Kyler Murray or, you know, any of these guys that have been really sort of dynamite.
And I've just to throw it back over to Coffee, because Coffee's been harping on this for the last, I think, 8 years since he's been on the show, that the whole reason we brought Brian Kelly here was because he had this ability to have a quarterback do exactly that, and he hasn't done it amazingly. He had it at Cincinnati, and we haven't seen it at Notre Dame, and he's had some bad breaks. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Some guys didn't turn out like we thought, but that is the truth of the matter, and that is the situation we're in, is when are we going to see the kind of quarterback that Brian Kelly wants calling the shots?
Well, I think part of that is when you're at a place like Central Michigan, when you're at a place like Cincinnati, and you're competing against people at your level, and you're recruiting right about the same level as those people, because let's face it, you're not going to get a lot of five-star recruits going to teams in the MAC or teams in Conference USA or wherever Cincinnati was back in I can barely remember what happened 2 weeks ago, let alone back in 2009. So I think it's easier to say, okay, I have three high three-star guys at my quarterback position. I'm going up against defenses constructed of high three-star guys for the most part. And so plugging and playing in that area is a lot easier. When you're playing schedules like you play at Notre Dame, when you're playing opponents like you're playing at Notre Dame, when you have guys that if you're not getting the five-star players, chances are they're going to the teams that you're playing. That makes it a lot more difficult to just say, okay, pull out person A, put in person B. You really, really need to get the talent that you get, and you have to coach them up. You have to develop them. And Mike, I agree with you that for whatever reason, quarterback play has not been reflected either in ranking or in improvement in ranking. I think it's fair to argue that Ian Book this year is one of the first quarterbacks that Brian Kelly's had for multiple years that have performed better in a subsequent year than they did in their early year. And part of that, I think, was Book's willingness, as I said before, to really just let it all hang out against Clemson the first time. And between that game and the second Clemson game, he played very, very well. I mean, the North Carolina game was fantastic.
Great game.
He had a fantastic game. The thing is, we need that guy back. And we need that guy back on Friday. If we don't have that guy on Friday, we're in trouble. And the fact that we haven't seen those step forwards in the quarterbacks is the prime issue. And Mike, as you pointed out, you don't win in college football without high quality quarterback play. I mean, look at the teams that have been in the playoffs the last 8, 9 years or whatever, or however long it's been going. The high quality quarterbacks are the ones that are winning. They may not have super talent at wide receiver, at running back or tight end or whatever, but they're going to have the quality quarterback. And until Notre Dame gets a quality quarterback, well, we are where we are.
Well, they're 60%+ completion rates, all that kind of stuff. But again, they're able to see over the line of scrimmage. And I mean, obviously that's a huge advantage, but all right, good deal. We'll leave it there. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanic and Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.